was a rumble in the jungle. Once I heard Dad was outside again counting birds, and Mama plugged in a nightlight, and I saw the queen of the world.
Welcome to the Golden Hour Birth Podcast. I am your co-host, Liz.
And I'm your co-host, Natalie. And tonight we have Dr. Katie on from upstate New York. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Hi, guys. I'm super excited to be here. I'm like even staying up past my bedtime right now.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. I know it's not easy these days.
No, it's great. You know, it's good to stay up late sometimes. Until you wake up early in the morning. Right? For the toddler. Yeah.
We all get that part. So Katie, if you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about you and your family, and we can go from there.
Sure. So I grew up in upstate New York and just really always had a love for nature, all things outside, just love playing and exploring. And, you know, I had a really fun childhood. And in high school, I decided around 11th grade that I would go to pharmacy school. So that's what I did. And that's actually where I met my husband during our third year of college. So he's a pharmacist as well. And we graduated in 2013 and we decided to start our family. So we have a 3.5-year-old daughter, Olivia, and I'm also a stepmom. So he had a son when he was 16, and actually his son is now 16 right now, now that I just kind of made that connection.
Oh my God.
So luckily, I don't think that will be happening on our end. But so I'm a stepmom as well. And we live kind of in the southern tier of New York. And just we have our two cats, our two dogs. So it's just kind of fun watching Olivia grow up. She loves her older brother. And right now she's just following the cats and the dogs all over the place. So just kind of living life right now and enjoying it and just, you know, watching her explore and her curiosity kind of grow.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Toddlers are so fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Just them picking up these pieces. It's really cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. 3 to 4 has been my favorite so far, I think.
Is that how old your kiddos are?
Yeah, Arthur will be 4 in February.
Okay.
And
yeah,
like blossomed so much. It's just crazy with the language and everything, and like becoming more aware.
Yeah, my husband and I will just look at each other like, is that normal for someone their age to like put those things together and understand it.
That's awesome. So after you guys got married and decided to start a family, if you want to kind of go into that, or deciding to start a family.
Sure, yeah. Start. Well, you know, I say that too because, you know, it's the first time that I'm, you know, giving birth. So yeah, we decided at the end of 2017, like, hey, let's do it. I was a little nervous to, you know, it's a big change to really think about being responsible for another life and all that. I remember, you know, almost feeling a lot of resistance in terms of like stopping my birth control, like, oh my gosh, is this really happening? So yeah, we started in November and I had full expectations that I totally thought I would be pregnant by Christmas and like telling my family. So I think that just shows how naive I was about the whole situation because it doesn't happen like that. But I guess, you know, society and like movies will, you know, they lead you to think that it happens that quickly. So it did not. And, you know, a few more months went by and I had reached out to my OB that I had been seeing at the time. And, you know, she just kind of patted me on the back and was like, your cycles are regular. You know, you're healthy. Just keep on trying. And, you know, that was pretty frustrating for me to hear without any like, hey, you could do this to optimize your fertility or, you know, just kind of give me any feedback or like action steps. So I was really doing a lot of research on my own. And a few more months had gone by, and I actually came across the fact that acupuncture can help with fertility. So I was really fortunate to be able to find an acupuncturist in Ithaca near where I live, and he was absolutely amazing. I learned so many things about myself, you know, through the traditional Chinese medicine lens. We use the acupuncture, moxie, Chinese herbs, and really kind of helped get my body into a balance, because I had been on birth control for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we started trying, that was like half of my lifetime at that point. And I actually forgot to mention, before we started trying, I actually reached out to my OB, you know, trying to plan ahead. And she told me that I could stop the birth control and start trying within the same month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do not recommend. It's not a good idea. You should really give your body at least bare minimum 3 months to recover from birth control and really get those nutrients back up, because birth control depletes your body of really vital nutrients. It can affect your gut health. It can actually shrink your ovaries, which they can come back, but, mm-hmm. you know, give them some time to do that. So I feel that was really not the best advice, but it is what it is. You know, the acupuncture really, really helped. And I had worked with him. It had been a few more months had gone by, and I actually switched offices. So I started seeing a midwife, and I went to her with the same concerns, and she kind of said the same thing, like, just keep trying, but, you know, if you want, you can schedule ahead for your fertility specialist appointment, because they book up, you know, they're really busy. So that was mm-hmm. kind of the very disappointing advice that she gave me. But I went ahead and did it, and I scheduled the appointment. It was for a few months ahead. But luckily, I think I saw her in July, and ironically, August, my husband and I were kind of on different schedules. He had some fun things he was doing, like a fishing trip. I had some fun things I was doing at like a bachelorette party. So we totally thought we were missing, you know, the fertile window. Mm-hmm. But you know what I think happened, but I don't know for sure because I don't remember. I think what happened is we ended up having sex before that positive OPK. You know, I think that that's a big mistake that women make, is they wait for that positive, but then that window kind of closes on them. So that's what I think happened, but I can't say for sure. And luckily, I ended up getting my positive pregnancy test in September.
Cool.
So yeah, the 1 month that we were like, yeah, it's not going to happen because
yeah,
you're going that way, I'm going this way. And then it somehow happened.
I think like fertility is so hard in that way of I like lost my train of thought. Hold on.
Shoot.
I thought, oh, like you have to like wait months, you know? It's not something like that you can wait days for or weeks for. It's like you have to wait months. You have to wait for your next cycle, to then wait for like the 2 week ovulation gap, and then like another 2 to 3 weeks for like even a positive test. And then if it doesn't work, you have to start all over. So it just would be really, really hard for this impatient Gemini I am.
I'm a Gemini as well.
I love it. When's your birthday?
May 27th.
Okay. June 5th. So pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely really have to learn patience, and it's hard. And you really end up living your life in like these 2 weeks. Increments. Mm-hmm. It's like you wait for ovulation to come, and then that comes, and then you're waiting another 2 weeks. Like, am I getting it flow, or am I going to get a pregnancy, you know, a positive pregnancy test? And it can be really, really daunting, and it can suck you in if you know, kind of aren't careful, because that's really what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I try to reflect to, you know, my clients and my fertility community that it's not necessarily meant to happen overnight. You know, there's so many miraculous things that have to come together to make it happen. And your body is really, really smart. It's going to know if this is a good egg or, you know, if the sperm isn't healthy enough to make it to the egg, then you may not necessarily want that to be the, you know, the embryo anyways. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So after you got the positive pregnancy test, what was pregnancy like for you?
Yeah, pretty smooth, I would say. I feel like this is different for everyone because I've heard so many different stories, but I called my doctor and I was like, oh, I got a pregnancy test. They made me wait until I was like 6 weeks to get an ultrasound. So they wouldn't even see me. So that was also like the longest wait of my life to see, you know, is this like really happening or not? So, but yeah, I mean, seeing that first ultrasound was really crazy. It was, you know, very, you know, I just realized like, wow, this is actually happening right now. Just a lot of disbelief, really. And it was good. I, you know, I have a type A personality. I love, you know, I'm a pharmacist, so I have that like analytical mind. So I'm like, let's just do the genetic testing and know all of the things. And I was told that everything came back normal, which was great. But then that next appointment that I had, she actually told me, oh, there was a result that hadn't come back yet. And you actually came back as a carrier for, and I can't remember exactly what it was. I want to say it was like SMA, but it was some like muscular issue. And, you know, if the father was also a carrier, it would make the chances be pretty good that the baby could have it. And I think it wouldn't be a very good quality of life. I think, you know, maybe they'd be lucky if they lived to like 1 year old or something, because I remember doing all the research. So then we had to have my husband go get tested and also wait for those results to come back. So that was really, really hard. But luckily he was not a carrier. And I'm thankful that I did do the genetic testing, because now I can tell my daughter, you know, I'm a carrier for this. I think she has like a 25% chance to also be a carrier. So now she can kind of know that moving forward. And also before any of that happened, I had a subchorionic hemorrhage. I think that's what they call it. Basically, like there's a little blood, like hemorrhage near the placenta, and typically it heals on its own, but I do think that it can progress to potentially move on to a miscarriage if it doesn't. So that was pretty early on in the pregnancy. So that was also scary. Mm-hmm. But I actually went back to the acupuncturist and he had put me on some herbs to kind of help heal that. And luckily, you know, whether it was the herbs or whether it was going to happen anyways, everything did heal and it was completely fine. Besides those two things, the pregnancy was great. It was really, really good. I did a ton of research. I'm going to drop two books if that's okay, that really, really helped me.
Yeah.
Real Food for Pregnancy by Lily Nichols is.
Follow her on Instagram.
Have you read her book? Oh my gosh. If you guys have any more kids, please read it. It's like the Bible for pregnancy. It's so amazing. So I did a lot of research. I read that. And then Mama Natural has like a week by week book. It tells you like each week throughout your pregnancy. And then she goes through all these things to kind of educate you on birth and what to expect and postpartum. No, I was ready. I was doing, you know, all of the education that I could. So really being mindful of my nutrition, you know, first trimester, that was a little tricky. I definitely had trouble eating a lot. I think I ended up losing around 4 or 5 pounds in the first trimester just because I wasn't able to eat that much. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. I was actually very low carb before I got pregnant. So I was pretty much having to eat like pretzels and toast and things that I really hadn't been eating before, but it was the only thing I could really stomach. And yes. One thing that I found that was really, really helpful was just eating before I even got out of bed. So like having like a couple crackers with cheese or peanut butter was my best friend. Apples and peanut butter. But yeah, I think around 16 weeks, I maybe started feeling her kicks, which was really fun. She had hiccups all the time, which she actually ended up, now that I think about it, she had hiccups a lot as like a baby too. So I don't know why that is, but yeah, it was good. And, halfway in my pregnancy, because I did learn so much from Mama Natural's book, I actually learned about doulas in the book, and I decided, yes, I want that. Because I knew in my mind I wanted to have like a natural pregnancy. I didn't really want, you know, to do an epidural or Pitocin or anything like that. So I went to interview the doula, and the thought of a home birth had already crossed my mind, but we kind of shoved it aside because we live 30 or more minutes away from two hospitals. So we were like, oh, that's, we can't do that. That's not safe. And ironically, the doula happened to live in the very small town that I live in, which is, I don't know, bizarre to me. And
yeah,
she also had a home birth. So then I was kind of like, okay, so it's possible. It's, you know, I could do it. If she did it, it's possible. It's not like a super crazy idea. And I ended up doing Mama Natural's birth course, which I also highly, highly recommend. Even if you want that epidural, I mean, this course just completely prepares you for everything to expect in the hospital, no matter what you envision for your birth, whether you want it naturally or you're like, give me all the drugs. It was such a good course. And I just felt really empowered with all that information. And, I was able to convince my husband to switch. I mean, it was really me, the one having to do it, but to switch to have a home birth like halfway in our pregnancy. So we left the practice that we were seeing, and our doula had recommended this midwife who's absolutely amazing. She only lived 20 minutes from us, just very naturally and holistically minded, which is what I, you know, envisioned and what I really aligned with. So that was just a really cool experience. I never had another ultrasound while I was with her. I mean, she just didn't even push anything like that. And I'm sure if I wanted to, she would have, you know, done whatever needed to be done so I could have one. But I just, you know, I had faith that everything was fine. And I had the, you know, like the anatomy scan before I left the practice, and everything was fine at that point. But yeah, it was just a really relaxed, like hands-off third trimester, pretty much. I really try to prepare mentally and physically for the birth process. So, you know, drinking that red raspberry leaf tea. I was eating the Lara bars for the date. And, you know, just trying to stay active and nourish myself. Since I was having a home birth, she, you know, I was still working in retail full time, 12-hour shift. She actually ended up pulling me out of work at 38 weeks because she was like, if you're still going to work and like doing all the things, like baby might not come. You know, she might not feel like it's safe to come because you're just still doing a lot of things and you're, you know, it's stressful in a retail pharmacy. So
yeah,
so she pulled me out and, you know, just kind of relaxing and getting final things done around the house. And in New York State, I don't know about your state, if you don't go into labor by 42 weeks, you know, they technically, like the midwife by law is not supposed to deliver at home. Like I would have had to go into the hospital, or maybe she would have had to even give me a, she had Pitocin, so I don't know if she would have done that alternatively, but so, you know, the days went on, the weeks went on, and Miss Olivia was still not showing up. So I think it was around 41 weeks. We were walking like 1 to 3 miles every single day. We were like having sex every day because, you know, semen has like the prostaglandins that can kind of help coax things to happen. I was eating pineapple, definitely doing like concentrated amounts of the red raspberry leaf tea. And I even forced my husband to walk in the rain one day. Like, we're walking with our rain jackets on. I'm like, we got to get this baby out. So I think at 41 weeks and 3 days, I went to a different acupuncturist, one that my midwife knew. And she did a special type of acupuncture to kind of get labor going. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a crazy, you know, what she did. She put like needles in my hand. And if I'm remembering correctly, she put like a TENS unit on the needles. So it was actually like sending like impulses through the needle.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I did end up having some contractions, some like Braxton Hicks and stuff. But the next morning after I, you know, went to the bathroom, those kind of dissipated. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, we're just kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. I think it was 41 weeks, 6 days. So really cutting it close. We went to see my midwife. We were potentially going to do a membrane sweep, but we decided not to because we didn't want to prematurely break my waters. And, let's see. Oh, we decided she learned about this castor oil concoction from another midwife, down Semo. So we decided to do that. So, it was still the 41 weeks, 6 days. I drank that around 1 p.m. I think it took me like 2 hours to drink it because it was awful. And I ended up actually getting sick because I don't even think I could finish it. It was not good. But yeah, I was in active labor by like 6:30 that night. I completely skipped early labor. Like, that just didn't even happen. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was pretty much the pregnancy. Really good. And I do want to say, just for any of the listeners, so they know that this is an option, when it was time to do the glucose test, you know, like the glucola test to test for gestational diabetes, I had, you know, told them, no, I'm not going to do that. There's other methods that you can do. And I decided to wear a continuous glucose monitor. So you can wear it for 2 weeks and it shows your blood glucose all throughout the day, all throughout the night. You can see how certain foods affect you. So really it gives you a much more clear picture of someone's, you know, body's response to sugar. And and that was really good. The sugar was good, minus, you know, grapes, I think, was the one thing that really spiked my sugar. Otherwise, everything was good.
Where did you get that?
So you can, that does require a prescription, but you can get it from a pharmacy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how did you wear it, or what did you have to do?
So there's like a little round patch, and it has a very small, thin needle, and you put it on your arm. It does not hurt at all.
Yeah.
And then you have like a reader, and you can just like, you can put it up. Actually, I think you could even hook it up to your phone now too, but you just put the reader right up and you could see right then and there, like what your blood sugar was.
Mm.
So a lot of diabetics use it if they, you know, don't want to like prick their finger multiple times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go online and create like an account, and that's where you can see like the levels throughout the day and throughout the night. So I thought it was really cool. It's kind of interesting and neat to see how your body responds to certain foods because everyone's so different.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. Like that. So I've heard about this castor oil too. This like, I don't know, I think she's like an Olympic sport person. But she like had twins like shortly after trying castor oil. And I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah. And I mean, just having plain castor oil can get things moving because it's basically going to make you go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like the movement of that can get things moving. But the one I had, it's like a secret recipe, so I can't share anything, but it had a ton of random stuff in it. A ton of random stuff.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But it apparently worked because, yeah, like I said, completely skipped early labor. It was like, okay, I'm having these contractions like 2 minutes apart and they're lasting like 1.5 minutes.
Right on track.
Yeah.
So how long after you took or finished the concoction?
The drink? Yeah, I mean, it took me a while to drink it. I wasn't finished until like 3, and then I was in labor at like 6:30.
No. Like,
3.5.
Like all of a sudden you're like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were even planning on like taking another walk that day. We were going to go to our favorite trail and go take a walk like after I took it because we weren't really kind of expecting it to happen so quickly.
Yeah.
But I think since I wasn't feeling good because of the drink, I remember it was like it was yesterday. We went upstairs. I think we put on sore or something like that. And then shortly after, I mean, that's when I was like, oh boy, like I'm starting to feel some things right now.
Yay. So what happened from there?
Yeah. So that's where things get really fun and interesting. It was good at first. I'm trying to think. Maybe around 7 is when my husband called the midwife and told her like, okay, her contractions are pretty close together. They're really consistent. So she was 20 minutes away. So she came. I unfortunately had to go through the experience of back labor.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone who's listening that's been through back labor, it is painful. So I pretty much labored for a while on like one of those yoga balls and was just kind of leaning over the side of the bed and just really kind of, I think I had an app on my phone to like time the contractions and that was enough distraction for me to kind of keep my mind off of, you know, things. And then eventually we did use a TENS unit, which was really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So they put that on my back and that was also a really nice distraction. Like, you know, I could turn it down when the contraction stopped. And then when it came back, I could turn it back up. So that was a nice distraction as well. But my legs just felt numb. Like I couldn't really feel them. So it was hard for me to do anything on my legs really, which was kind of a sad thing at, you know, when you think about it, because there's so many like primal ways that you can labor in, but my body just couldn't even do it. I'm trying to think, we use some essential oils as well. Counter pressure worked really, really nicely. The midwife and the doula would just kind of press on my hips and that was nice. I don't really know how long I was on the birthing ball for, but I was pretty good spirits. And the only people we allowed in the house were both of our moms. And actually, all they did was like open the door and peep in and say hi. And my labor actually slowed down after they did that. So
like,
I think it just, just goes to show like how interruptions and things like that can slow labor down. Like if you think about it in a hospital, when a nurse or someone is constantly like bombarding you with questions or trying to poke you with things or, you know, who knows what, that can really slow down, you know, a woman's labor. And then when you're not progressing fast enough, that's when they want to, you know, give you some Pitocin and move things along. So we ended up going back into the shower. We have like two shower heads. So we have one that you can like take off the wall. And that was really, really nice. Just kind of putting that hot water on the area. We were in there for a really long time, but obviously the hot water only lasts for so long. And I just remember like having to get up get down on the ground and to get through the contraction. And then I would get back up and then get back down. And I just felt completely exhausted from it. Like just so much up and down. And the contractions were pretty painful. And we had tried to do a bath, but that did not give me any comfort really, because of the baby, you could only have the water so hot and it just wasn't even touching the pain. So after we got out of the shower, I was actually exhausted and we took a nap for 2 hours. I don't know if that's like a
oh my God.
I was like, I'm tired. Can I sleep? And she was like, yeah. So that's kind of another beauty of doing it in your home is you can kind of do what you want, really. And we slept from like 4 to 6 a.m. So, I mean, I guess a lot had gone, you know, a lot of time. I started around 6 and then we lay down around 4. It is all quite blurry for me, honestly. So that's what I recall mostly is just a lot of laboring on the ball and then in the shower and maybe a little bit on the floor. But then we woke up, I think around 6 in the morning, the contractions were starting to come back. And this time, unfortunately, the TENS unit wasn't even touching the pain at this point. Like it was pretty rough. She had actually tried to do like an internal check and move the baby because she was pretty sure that her hand was on her face. And that's what was causing like all of this pain. Like she was just hitting my nerve. Like my legs were just like, they felt like jelly at this point. Like I couldn't even do anything. I remember she wanted me to, I think it's like, you can go up and down the stairs. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah. Like sideline walking.
Yeah. I tried, but I was like, I can't, my legs were just a mess. So I think it was really just trying to hold like my intention and what I really wanted and envisioned for the birth, you know, having her at home. So just holding on to that because the pain was definitely like pretty excruciating, like in the back and in the legs. So she did try to move her. And in doing so, she did actually end up breaking my water. So that broke and things kind of progressed a little bit faster after that. I think that's when the dial definitely went up in terms of like the pain. And I just kept trying to labor in any position that really felt comfortable at that point. I definitely just remember being on like all fours on the ground or trying to do the birthing ball. And then, let's see, I think it was like 1 p.m. In the afternoon, and she was going to try to move her again because that's just how bad the pain was at this point. And now, mind you, I haven't really said this, but not one time during the pregnancy, she never checked. And during the whole birthing process, she never once told me how dilated I was. I never knew. And I think that was actually kind of nice, because I feel like that can really get in your head, like whether it's, oh, you're only 4 centimeters, then it's like, oh gosh, I'm not far enough, or like you're 9 centimeters, but then you're still in labor for like 10 more. You know what I mean? Like it can really get in your head. So I was thankful that she didn't do that. But when she went back in a train to move her, she was like, you're fully dilated, you can start pushing. And I just remember feeling so like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Yes, the end is near. So I ended up being in labor for 20 hours, I think. Yeah, that's what I have written down in my notes that I made 3.5 years ago. But 20 hours, and then pushing wasn't that bad. I was definitely exhausted, and they were really trying to get me to like eat something. So that was a little hard to kind of get anything down. Luckily, I had like some honey sticks. We froze some grapes. We made like coconut water, ice cubes, things like that. But they tried to get me to eat a smoothie, and that was hard. But since I had gotten sick twice the day before, you know, my energy levels were already kind of not where they could be. So, but pushing wasn't that bad, you know. She really kind of, well, her and the doula really helped me let my body just kind of do its own thing and really help push her down and kind of take advantage of when the contraction was setting in. So overall, I don't remember that, like that was heaven's, going through the pushing phase was like heaven sent, like over going through like the labor. And my husband was behind me, and, you know, I was able to kind of like use his arms as like a brace for, you know, whatever I needed. So I ended up being in labor for, I think, like 2.5 hours. So she ended up being delivered at 3:21 p.m. So that was amazing. And I do remember at one point, you know, when I was pushing, my doula, or maybe it was the midwife, was like, you can touch her head. And I just like that moment and like touching her head just like totally stuck with me. Like I remember when she would, you know, when she was just a baby, I would touch her head and it would like totally transport me back to that moment. It was just such a like motivational, like you're so close, like part of her head is out. You can do that. So yeah, that's how that went.
That's really beautiful. That's cute.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of our labors are very similar, of like the back labor to the shower and then like your legs getting so tired, but in the back you couldn't like really get comfortable and the water couldn't touch where you needed it. Just like little things here and there. I'm like, oh, it sounds like ours.
Yeah. Oh, and actually I forgot. So the next day, like after we had woken up, some point in that day, she actually had to catheterize me because I could not empty my bladder. So like that's how much she was just shoved, you know, where she shouldn't be, but she wanted. So yeah, I couldn't go to the bathroom. So that might have been part of the problem too.
I had that problem.
Did you?
Yeah.
Very painful.
Yeah. It's not the most pleasant experience. I actually asked to be cath because like during labor, because I was so frustrated, like I felt my bladder filling up, but like I could not empty a drop. And so I was just getting more frustrated.
Yeah. I don't even think I could feel it, to be honest. And the amount that came out, I was like in shock because it didn't even feel to me like I had to go to the bathroom. Like it was kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I forgot about that part, but that wasn't really pleasant. Although it, you know, it was something that definitely needed to happen for sure.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah. When she came out, did she have her hand up or was she repositioned?
I think she did come out with her hand there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually had, a short umbilical cord, so I could only pull her up to like my stomach area, but she laid there for, you know, we did have that golden hour. We had that delayed cord clamping and, you know, just kind of holding her and just, I don't, she was pretty good. She didn't even really have to be cleaned up that much. I mean, gosh, 42 weeks, there was none of that Gernax or anything like that. But yeah, I think she latched around 5 p.m. So that had happened. And oh, and then there's delivering the placenta. So I'm trying to think, that maybe happened around an hour after. Like there wasn't really any push to kind of get that done. But when it did happen, I did end up losing quite a bit of blood. I think it was like 800 mils, the midwife had said to me. So I actually had to get a shot of Pitocin. And she also had to give me Cytotec rectally. So I, you know, felt extra violated that, you know, all the things down there.
Yes. Oh, man.
And I needed IV fluids too. Yeah. So, and pretty sure, yeah, that, it, yeah, because I had her in the afternoon. So that same day, the midwife would not leave until I was able to go to the bathroom on my own. So that was also a little difficult. Like, my, it just wouldn't happen right away. I don't know why. But yeah, that was, it was a marathon, but it was definitely worth that. And she had, you know, an Apgar score of 9 both times, and everything was great. And I think the beauty about having a home birth was I was already home. It was just some, like, we didn't have to go anywhere. The midwife came back and checked up on us. She really took care of Olivia for the first few weeks of her life. I mean, she just kept coming back and checking on her and checking on me. Like, she didn't even go to the doctor until I think she was a few weeks old. So it was just nice being in this like little bubble that was my room and just kind of have everything there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a different model of care from the hospital.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Those midwives are pretty great.
Oh my God.
Like, she's an angel.
Women-centered, you know, not doctor-centered. I don't know.
Yeah. And just like knowing that she'd be there if I had any questions and checking on Olivia, you know, with any questions that were coming up, and then like lactation too, like having that support. And I had the doula as well. I had, I think, a couple more, maybe one or two more like home visits from her as well. So to just have that support, because I mean, breastfeeding is definitely not easy in the beginning. Both you and baby are learning like what to do. You're getting to know each other. And obviously mom is like sleep deprived too. And, I remember thinking at one point during like the first 2 weeks, cause like my nipples were so sore, just like I'm going to have to just pump and bottle feed her. Like, I'm not going to be able to exclusively breastfeed, but you know, we learned and we pivoted and we learned to make it work. And I was able to, you know, breastfeed her, which was really like the most beautiful bonding experience I think I've ever had in my entire life, really, breastfeeding.
That's awesome. We said a lot of pivots early in our podcast days. It felt like everything was pivot.
Yeah, exactly.
Mother.
Yeah. She know?
Yeah. How was healing and just kind of getting back to your norm? Or if you haven't got back to norm.
Right. You know, putting yourself back together.
Yeah.
It was good. I'm definitely very fortunate and blessed to, you know, have had the support I had from the midwife and the doula. And then my husband was amazing. Luckily, he loves to cook. So he was, you know, making me really nutrient dense meals, very nourishing meals. Like, he actually would not even let me go downstairs for like the first week, because I think we like read that in one of the books. It was like, technically in some other cultures, like the mom is not even like allowed to leave this room for like,
yeah,
a month or something. And he wouldn't let me go down the stairs. So like, everything was really brought up to me. I mean, it was still like, oh my gosh, what did I just get myself into? This small, cute baby won't stop crying. What's to do? But yeah, healing was good. After losing all that blood, she had some device that was able to test my hemoglobin. And I think I was at like an 8 after birth. But within just a couple of days with some supplements that I was taking and then just really focused on like nourishing meals, I was back up to a 12. So
that's good.
That was really good. Just really focusing on like nutrient dense food. I did have a little separation, maybe like 1 or 2 finger worth of like the abdominal separation. I was seeing, like a PT, a physical therapist towards the end of my pregnancy. I was also seeing a chiropractor as well. Both of those things highly recommend, especially before and after birth, because seeing the chiropractor can really help keep you like your body aligned. And then the physical therapist can really work with like your pelvic floor, helping you like rebuild your abdominal strength. Cause that was definitely something that I wanted to do. You know, just because your mother maybe pees her pants when she laughs, or your aunt or someone, that doesn't mean that it's normal. That just really means that your pelvic floor needs a little bit of love. So, I think just knowing that those are options out there for you, cause I don't think that a lot of women know that seeing like a PT can really help kind of help you get that strength back. So I had a really good team to kind of help, you know, help me get myself back together. So I would say it was good, you know, other than the learning curve of like, how do I use this breast pumping device? I was very intimidated by that.
Yes.
And like, how do I keep this baby alive? But yeah, it was a good experience. But the newborn phase is definitely, it's difficult. And I'm so happy. I had her in May. So her due date was May 3rd, but her birthday is May 16th. I'm so thankful I had her at that time. I mean, I had the sun, the longer days. Like if I had had her in the winter, oh my gosh, I think postpartum depression definitely would have been knocking on my door for sure. But the fact that like we could get outside, you know, go on walks and stuff, that was really helpful, because I'm one that really kind of thrives with like sunshine and the light. I mean, I think we all do as humans, but yeah, when it's too dark for too long, it can be really sad.
Yeah, I already get sad now.
Yeah.
I'll say I'm a winter baby.
Yeah. And then if, you know, if it snows where you are in the winter, then you can't even get outside or go for a walk, you know, try and walk the baby and just get out of the house.
Yeah.
One of my first pictures is of being outside. I have Arthur in a winter hat and he's all wrapped up in me and I've got a big coat on. And my mom and I remember walking through the park, just the wind, like, cutting our faces, and I'm just like, why am I doing this? Awful.
I know. I've been, yeah. I had an April 28th baby, so I know, like, we were out on, like, a walk, like, 1 week later, And now I'm like, okay, I'm having a January baby. Yeah, I get to sit on the couch. And then I'm thinking, like, it would be nice to have, like, the sun out again.
Yeah. Yeah.
St. Louis, so it'll probably be, like, 60 one day, 30 the next.
Yeah, that's New York too, for sure.
Yeah. So you do like fertility coaching now, right? How did you get into that after having Olivia?
Yeah. So, you know, originally a full-time pharmacist in retail. And, you know, I'm both of you know, I'm sure, motherhood is extremely transformational. And I feel like that's not talked about enough. Like, the mom goes through really a complete like rebirth of herself. It's quite incredible. And I just think that, I don't know, I really became this like whole new person, just, you know, no more BS, no more dealing with people's crap, like no more people pleasing. Like, this is what I want. This is what I deserve. Like, same for my child. Just a lot of those like mama bear instinct, I think, came out, but not just for her, but like for myself too. And, you know, just wanting to feel aligned with what I was doing. And then also, you know, throughout my fertility and my pregnancy experience, I really noticed like the gap that is, you know, there between education and support for women who are struggling to get pregnant. And then even when they do get pregnant, there, you know, I got like no nutritional advice on how I could really optimally support myself and my baby, which I think is just a huge missed opportunity. And yeah, the fertility space just needs, women need support. It was a very isolating experience to go through. And had I even known that fertility coaches were like a thing when I was going through, I would have hired one like that. I mean, if you can have someone there to kind of help you every step of the way and that can kind of give you like a blueprint of what can ideally optimize your fertility, then yeah, sign me up. So that's what I do. I just really, at the end of the day, try to educate and empower women so they know that they are making the best choices for that feel good to them, so they know their options, so they can feel informed, and then also so they can advocate for themselves. You know, I had to advocate for myself a few times when I was in the conventional space before I switched to the midway. In terms of like that glucose test, I wanted to get my vitamin D tested when I was first pregnant. And I was pretty much told like, oh, well, we don't really do that, but it doesn't matter. That's, you know, I'm really hiring you as my doctor. This is what I want. So just giving women that confidence too, so they can show up for themselves and in the way that feels good to them in terms of advocating for their health.
Yeah. That's really important. Yeah. My doula always was talking about that. And it was just nice to know and like give me like a little bit of armor.
Yeah.
Especially just, I don't know, growing up in like not that kind of way.
Yeah. And I actually kind of thought about it. I'm like, it's kind of like I'm a fertility doula, really. I mean, it's like, doulas are our coaches. I mean, they have so much information to share with you, and they're there to like hold your hand through it and help you advocate for yourself and advocate for you too, you know, when they're in the room. So yeah, that's kind of what it is. It's just before pregnancy and birth. It's just kind of helping you have a healthy pregnancy and then also in return a healthy postpartum. By being able to take care of yourself, really.
Yeah.
That's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Is there any advice you'd want to share or any last minute thoughts?
I would say, you know, if you're struggling, don't be afraid to ask for support. It doesn't mean that, you know, that you're weak or that you can't handle it yourself. And just knowing that, like, whether it's fertility, pregnancy, or postpartum related, like, nothing is wrong with you. You are not broken. Like, if you are able to kind of get the right support and guidance, whether it's a doula or a midwife or a coach, like, someone is there, like, waiting to help you. You just kind of have to be open to receiving that help. So just being open and willing to seek out support if you feel that that's something that you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And just love hearing your story and where it led you today.
Yeah, thank you both. It was really nice meeting you. And thanks for giving me the space to share my story.
Of course.
Yeah, you're welcome. One last thing. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, so my website is really the best place. So happynourishedmotherhood.com. So that's going to have all my social media links in the top corner. I have a lot of free resources in there as well. And also lots of buttons there to book a free consultation. Fertility is my focus, but I do also support with pregnancy, postpartum, or just general women's health as well.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I hope you have a happy holiday.
Thank you.
You too. Thanks.
And thank you to our listeners for spending this time with us. And we hope to see you next episode.